VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Ruckers. There's no time to lose this week with much to discuss, so let's get on with it. Sale and Saracens made the Premiership final. Stormers and Munster, made the URC final. We've got Champions and Challenge Cup finals and loads else going on. Will Kelleher here. And joining me in the studio is the Times' Bryn Terfel. Elgin Alderman. Elgin, you're right. Where were you this week? I've heard you were singing.
I was singing. I have been singing this week. I was at Jamie Roberts' testimonial dinner last week. We were singing just a little bit of a few introductory pieces while all the famous rugby stars were turning up to raise lots of money for Jamie Roberts' chosen charity. And then as soon as Martin Bayfield came up to begin proceedings, we were turfed out and had to leave.
So, really?
But we had a lovely time while we were there. And Jamie was a very gracious host, came and said hello to all the members of the choir. So it was good fun to be there. Obviously, we were happy just to be there for any part
of it. Did you miss Stereophonics? Because they were there.
Yeah, sadly, we weren't there. We warmed up the stage for the Stereophonics and then we left it to them thereafter. But no, it was a great evening and by all accounts, very successful evening. Raised a lot of money for charity.
Yeah. Mark Palmer's on the line from our Scottish studios. Mark, are you an operatic singer? Where are you on that?
Probably best that I don't give any evidence either way, frankly. But
after 10 pints, you're brilliant, I've heard.
Indeed, yes. As with most things.
Yeah. So how's things? Everyone getting excited up your way with Glasgow in the Challenge Cup final on Friday?
Yes, as I was telling you there before we came on, I'm in a broom cupboard at Scotstoun as we speak, preparing for our first access of the week ahead of the Challenge Cup final on Friday. As you say, a big excitement here. Only the second time a Scottish team has been in a European final, first time for Glasgow. So new ground being broken all round, and hopefully they can continue that by actually bringing home the trophy.
Perfect. Well, we'll get on to that and loads more because we're going to have Dan Bigger, friend of the pod, coming in hot from Toulon, Glasgow's opponents. We'll also talk about the Premiership semi-finals, a bit of URC semi-finals as well. And as ever, we will name God or Goddess of the Week with a bit of Champions Cup final preview in there as well. But we've got loads to do, so why don't we get on with it, starting with the Premiership semis. OK, so Premiership semi-finals, we have the final we probably predicted a few weeks out. Sale made it and Saracens made it, 1v2. And I'm enjoying the fact that my stat is still alive, that the third place team has never won the title. So that lives another year. But where should we start? Should we start with Saracens? To me, it felt like every single Saracen semi-final pretty much ever, the ones they've won anyway, winning about 30-odd, 15-odd. What did you make of it, Elgin?
Yeah, I mean, with the exception of obviously that famous Henry Slade kick to the corner when Exeter just nabbed it at the end, you do just tend to expect Saracens to have their way with semi-finals, as they often have in the late 2010s before they before they were knocked out of the league very briefly. But yeah, I mean, it did go sort of as you expect. You know, Northampton, you look at the table and I think only Newcastle conceded more tries than them this season. You do expect teams in the top four to have really tight defences. We saw Harlequins buck that trend when they conceded, I think, 30 more tries than the other three teams in the top four. But by and large, you do get, you know, the tight championship-winning teams are the ones that defend manfully for 80 minutes. And Saracens did that yet again. But in addition to that, you had some excellent attacking play. You had Owen Farrell running the show from number 10 in the way that a lot of, you know, he has a lot of detractors who regard him as being quite a dour, boring fly-half, but actually, you know, he makes a very good attacking Saracens team tick in many ways. So, yeah, there weren't many surprises, and undoubtedly they will go into the final as huge favourites.
Yeah, it was funny what we were talking about this off-air before, because having watched it, I wasn't at the game, but I was watching it on telly, and because I went to the Sale one, and after it had finished, I just was a bit sort of thinking, oh, I don't know, these semi-finals are not brilliant. Like, the top two teams often win them. They're never that close. And I don't know, is there an easier way of getting to the inevitable 1v2 final? But then, up at Sale, it was epic. And we'll get onto that in a second. But we should deal first with the son of Scotland, Sean Maitland. Did you see that, Mark? That sort of rogue, I don't know, he jumped without really looking where he was going and smacked George Furbank, who had a serious bang to the head quite early on in the game as well, and Carl Dixon looked desperate not to brandish too dark a colour of card. So what did you make of that, Mark?
Well, as we all know, you know, the time that these incidents occur in the game shouldn't have any influence, but you can't help but think that it did in this case. And I must declare an interest as being a lifelong president of the Sean Maitland fan club. So, you know, I do think he was a lucky boy. And it's very much unlike him because, you know, aerially, he judges those things almost, you know, almost without fail to perfection. His interventions there got that one wrong. And you can see why Saints were awfully miffed that it didn't result in a greater penalty.
Yeah, it's that funny one, isn't it? Because you sort of think if Saracens had him sent off early on, probably would have made a more interesting game. It's that, oh, cards ruin games thing, which sometimes actually they might have improved it. But there we go. So Saracens won.
Yeah, I'm scoring the tries.
Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah, that was the galling thing. I think the second one came when he probably would have come back on if he'd been yellow.
Yeah.
But two tries, classic. Always happens like that, doesn't it? But then, so I went up to Sale on Sunday, and I don't know, maybe I should have tapped into this before, but I kind of wasn't expecting it to be as absolutely raucous as it was. It was amazing. Like, we turned up, and you guys know, you go to a game and you always, it's a slight struggle to find the right entrance. And this time it was a struggle because there's so many people in the way. It was, like, every time you go up to Sale, it's largely a bit soulless and a bit kind of, I don't know, understated. And they've had so many problems over the last decade or so trying to get people in there. But it was a full house to the point where they didn't really know what a full house was, like how many people that is, because they've basically never got close to it, really. They had about 10,000 in for the Leicester game around Christmas, where they smashed them about 40 points when Wigglesworth had just taken over. But this time there are more people there, and it helped that about 2,000 Tigers fans came up the road. But outside the ground beforehand, they were about four deep waiting for the buses to come in. They had blue flares going mad. Atmosphere was amazing. Everyone kind of just took their seats with about an hour to go before kickoff. It was just awesome. And then I just thought George Ford was exceptional. Just lovely kicks into the corners, and the Northern boys chasing them, Aaron Reid and Tom Roebuck and Joe Carpenter. What did you make of it when you were watching it, Elgin?
The loveliest moment for me was, it didn't lead to a try in the end, but there was just that little delayed pass that George Ford gave. It was one of, I think, two or three he did during the game. That just, he brings the defender onto him, and as an attacker is coming round, I think it was Anthony Watson out wide, he just went to the men out wide, and just a lovely delayed pass, the type of thing you see George Ford, you see Marcus Smith do when he's at his best. And it just sent Roebuck through the middle. In the end, he couldn't quite get the offload away to Aaron Reid out wide. But it's just those delayed passes that make George Ford, you know, again, probably a bit too maligned, you know, as an attacking force. And
yeah.
And again, you know, obviously he's not been in the running for England in recent years, much maligned. But again, if England had George Ford at fly half, I don't think it would be any bad thing. They've got, you know, two great options in Ford and Farrell, and we're going to see them coming up against each other, hopefully, yeah, in a final.
Yeah, he tried to dampen that down, that battle between himself and Farrell. I mean, when we spoke to him afterwards, sort of giving the quip of like, oh, it's just me against him, is it? But yeah, that's going to be great fun. And
we've seen them before, because 2015 was Bath Saracens, and last year was obviously, it ended up being the Freddie Burns final, because George Ford went off early, but that was Leicester versus Saracens. So now he's having a third crack with a third different team in
amazing, isn't it?
Final appearances.
Yeah, and I don't know, we love a narrative, don't we, Mark? But I think us who cover England a bit more than other teams, that who's going to the World Cup as the Tens narrative is going to keep us going all summer, isn't it? I mean, it's certainly going to be Farrell as the captain, and I'm sure Ford will go, but it's, do you pick Smith as well in a 33? That's going to keep us busy, isn't it, for the next few months?
No, indeed. I was keeping an eye there as well on two guys that I've been quite surprised haven't ended up in Gregor Townsend's army of imports, in inverted commas. Tom Roebuck, who comes from the same bonnie Highland city as Inverness as myself.
Oh, yeah.
And Gus Waugh, who's worn both jerseys at age grade level. So, okay, yeah. So I very much thought we might see one of those in Gregor's World Cup training squad. You know, we know how he loves a curveball, but no, it was actually quite a dull squad by his standard. Yeah. But those two have done excellently well in what looks a really, you know, impressive machine there. You know, every time I see Sol there, you know, it just all looks so slick, both on either side of the ball, and delighted for them to kind of finally be back into the big time.
Yeah, this might be a bit of a, I don't know, behind the curtain media-y point to make, but I think I just have loved this season. Like, we've had Sale players on the ruck this season. I feel like their media department and their marketing team and all that just are getting it. They really need to sell themselves, and it clearly works. I mean, sold out the AJ Bell Stadium, which they haven't done for ages properly, and their whole Northern Rugby Matters campaign, everyone had t-shirts on, it was all lined up, and they've got Northern lads in the back line and in the pack with a few Afrikaners obviously as well, which helps. But they just seem to be getting it that they can't be quiet up there. You've got to keep shouting about it. And you saw their old coach Steve Diamond in the week, who's up your way, Mark, now in Edinburgh, saying how much of a disgrace it was that no Sale players got major awards at the Premiership Rugby dinner the other day. But I don't know, I just think they're growing something really cool there. And Alex Sanderson was saying afterwards that he almost doesn't like to talk about that side of it too much, because he'll start crying, because it just feels so special for him as a Northerner who's going back there, and someone who captained the club and played for the club, and his brother played there for a bit too. It just seems like there's something slightly more intangible there that's really cool. And in a season that's been horrendous for lots of reasons, for losing clubs, and there's more to come possibly with that for London Irish, which we may touch on. I just thought it was a cool occasion and showed the best of Premiership rugby at last.
I think it is, you know, it is so important for teams to have that local edge to what they're doing. You know, at the start of this year, I went to Caldy just after they'd beat Ealing Trailfinders, and, you know, their aim is to establish a championship club on the Wirral. They've stayed up this year. That's great. And a big thing about what they wanted to do was they, you know, when they got promoted to the championship, they were inundated with messages from agents saying, oh, do you want to have a look at, you know, my guy? But a big thing for them is trying to keep players from the area, to have more of that local feel. Obviously, Caldy is a very grassroots club. You know, they're playing in the championship, but they have, you know, 23 park benches is their stadium, basically. But, you know, it is so important to have that local edge, so that fans feel like, you know, they're representing their boys when they're playing, you know, in big matches.
Yeah, absolutely. And not to bring it down too much, but I think we should probably touch on this London Irish story that's going to keep rumbling on very briefly. So we're recording this on Monday, and if you're a keen subscriber to The Times, which I'm sure all of you are, then you will have seen that Alex Lowe, our rugby correspondent, has been writing well about this over the last few days. And essentially, there's going to be a deadline from the RFU for London Irish to complete their takeover, which includes a slightly random smattering of American sports people, including Ray Lewis, the former MNFL player. They need to sort that by the end of the month, or they're in some deep trouble, I think. So let's cross all fingers and toes that can happen, because losing three clubs in a season would be absolutely horrendous. But why don't we move on? Should we just quickly have a word on Northampton Saints and Leicester Tigers? I think they probably don't feel it on Monday morning, but still pretty remarkable effort from Richard Wigglesworth at Leicester, Elgin, to have basically had all of his mates ripped out, and then they're all going now. Tom Harrison, him, Alan Walters, all going to England to join Steve Borthwick and Kevin Sinfield, but pretty decent effort to wrestle that back. An 8% chance they had at one point to get into the playoffs.
I was on the ruck in December, which was when Steve Borthwick was still at Leicester, but was about to be made, as everyone expected, the England head coach. And I was there at the Leicester Ospreys game when the questions were just about, so Steve, are you still going to be here on Monday, basically? And that's what everyone was talking about. And I came on just after the England, he was announced as the England head coach. And I remember being asked, you know, how are Leicester going to deal with that? Because they are losing their main man that has turned them around from a team that was 11th to a team that had won the title. And they started off not great under Richard Wigglesworth, but I mean, they've turned it around so well to get to the semi, even getting to the semi-finals based off what they were looking like halfway halfway through the season. It has to be seen as some kind of success. For Northampton, you know, a second semi-final in a row, but the second another defeat, and they have lost a lot of Premiership semi-finals, but they're still getting there. So one day it'll come again where they are back in the final. But again, just, you know, probably just tighten up on some of that defence. You know, we love seeing them score so many tries, but if they just saw that some of those nuts and bolts, then, you know, they'll be able to match Saracens even better if they get there again.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, so that was the Premiership season, and there's two teams left, Ford v Farrell, Sale v Saracens, Alex Sanderson versus Mark McCall and all of his old mates. That's going to be a belter in a couple of weeks' time. But up next, there were some other interesting semi-finals. Very interesting results, certainly. Munster upsetting Leinster and Stormers setting up another URC final in Cape Town. So why don't we talk about that next? Right, so in the URC, unbelievable scenes, I suppose is the phrase, isn't it? With Jack Crowley's drop goal, Munster 16, Leinster 15, Leinster fall at the semi-final hurdle again, Mark. That was a shock result, surely.
It was, and having seen Munster appear in Glasgow the previous week in the quarterfinal, I could not have seen that coming. Albeit they did show incredible resilience that night. They lost four guys to head injuries, key players as well. Didn't create too many opportunities, but were very, very clinical when they did. And they've carried that through into the semi-final. There's a real desperation about them, having spoken to them, you know, either side of that quarterfinal. They know that it's been far too long. It was 2011-12 or something since they last won a trophy. So they know that that needs to be righted. I just thought it was a tremendous performance. Lots of guts on both sides of the ball. They've come together under Graham Rowntree this year performing more consistently than they had been in previous seasons. We'd seen flashes of the old Munster in those years, but nothing quite as consistently as they've served it up this year. I think they had a real reality check back in March when a fairly weakened Glasgow team went to Thomond Park and spanked them. And they've spoken about that since as being a kind of turning point to say, no, look, you know, that is not who we are. Sort that out for the business end of the season. And they appear to be doing that very well, albeit now with a pretty tricky assignment for the final, one after another.
Yeah. So as someone who covers the URC more than we do you just find it more interesting, to put it as bluntly as that, that Leinster aren't just winning it all the time now? That these South African teams, and they're not just losing to them, but they're losing to other teams too.
Definitely. And I think there's been a real influx of excitement in this competition over the last couple of years. It badly needed. I think a lot of us were probably sceptical about the introduction of the South Africans from a logistical point of view, and just how, you know, rivalries that had never existed before, how could they be established to mean something and to matter in a short space of time? But they have. I think they've definitely asked questions of the Northern Hemisphere teams that they hadn't been asked by their cohorts. The general level has improved across the board, I think, in the competition. As you see now, three out of the last, the two finals since the South African teams have been there, they've had three finalists of the four. So, you know, the contribution they're making on the field is fairly self-evident. It's good for everyone that, well, apart from Leinster, that they don't go on and win it for the 500th time in a row. I know there's been a bit of criticism about some of their selections for the game, but, we often speak to each other up here and say, there are three Leinster 15s that could win the URC, but maybe we've massively overstated that, because quite obviously there aren't in this case.
Well, does there have to be some... I mean, I know that there's a small regime change there, or maybe large one, with Stuart Lancaster going to Racing 92 and the little-known Jacques Nienaber going to Leinster. But is there some sort of recalibration, do you think, they need there? I mean, during the normal season, they're pretty much fine. They're largely going to get into the last four, aren't they? But they've now lost two semi-finals in a row with a European Cup final on the horizon. And it was interesting, I just saw, following a few of the guys who cover the Irish provinces and Irish national team a fair bit, when Will Connors went off early, there was suggestion that, oh no, Josh van der Vlier is going to have to play 79 minutes a week before a final, rather than it's a semi-final now. I don't know, does everyone around that way have to kind of rethink it a little bit now that they're not just marching through all these URC games?
Possibly. I'm sure there will, you know, knowing the whole kind of culture of that organisation, there will be a massive inquest as to why that's happened a couple of years in a row. Freshening up the coaching team, replacing one quality operator with another, I think can only benefit. Some of the most successful managers across sports have always been very good at kind of making sure that those guys alongside them are rotated and that, you know, people don't get a chance to become comfortable or stale. And I think Leo's obviously following that tack as well. You'd struggle to say that this is a team that's in a bad place if they now go on and win a Champions Cup at the weekend, but definitely they don't carry that air of invincibility that they did at one point.
Yeah, and La Rochelle beat them last year, didn't they? So that's going to add a bit of pressure for this Champions Cup final coming.
I think what's interesting is that three of the teams taking part in the finals that played the weekend just gone all rested players for very different reasons. La Rochelle rested them because they are all but assured of finishing second in the top 14, so they rested a lot of their players. They played, Bottier came off the bench, Dante returned from injury, so they did play some of the players to give them some game time. But they rested a lot of players and lost to Montpellier. Toulon rested a lot of players and lost 43-7. Part of the reason Toulon rested players is because they need to get their GIF average up, because they need, they need 36 GIF players, so basically domestic players, in their last two games to make sure they don't get a points deduction. So they lost as well with resting a lot of players, and obviously Leinster lose by 1 point for the second year in a row, because Leinster were looking at the prospect of, I think, five knockout games in successive weekends, so that it was almost like, you know, a World Cup knockout stage for them, dealing with URC and the Champions Cup. I think one thing that was slightly different last year was that they'd already lost to La Rochelle before the semi-final, I think it was, so they then put all their eggs in the URC basket and still lost by 1 point, so two different ways of doing it, and they both come unstuck in the same way. So if they win the Champions Cup, people will all but forget about this. But if they lose the Champions Cup again, then it's 2 years in a row where they've had to rest some players and have failed to get silver on both occasions.
So now that the Stormers are playing Munster in the final, the final's going to be in Cape Town, Mark, which I think the Stormers were pretty pleased about when they found out.
I mean, it's always a slightly questionable tactic, I feel, when when teams celebrate draws, or as in who they've been paired with. Obviously, it wasn't a draw in this case, but they were, you know, it's not difficult to understand why they feel a home final against Munster would be preferable to an away final against Leinster. I think they will have enough, having seen them multiple times this season, Stormers. I think they would go in as a strong favourite, say, again, both sides of the ball, very strong, got some electric backs there and an outstanding pack, so Munster having to travel down there, it's a big, big ask. It would be, I think, one of the most impressive results in their history if they could pull that off.
I suppose that's the thing, isn't it? In the Champions Cup, as in the URC, anyone who can win in South Africa is going to bloody deserve it, basically.
And Munster have won in South Africa last month. Although there was, the Stormers were suffering from, I think, a lot of travel fatigue at the time, which is a caveat. But Munster's away form has been superb. So against a slightly more rested Stormers, you know, they will still stand a chance based off their recent form.
Yeah. So we are going to tackle the Champions Cup in a little bit. But first, why not the Challenge Cup? Because that's coming on Friday. And up next, we're going to chat to a friend of the podcast, Dan Bigger, who's gearing up for that game for Toulon against Glasgow. So, right, pleasure to be joined by Dan Bigger down the line from Toulon. And Dan, we've just been saying off air, the weather looks absolutely horrendous where you are.
We're lucky down here. Weather's been pretty good. I actually had a tiny bit of rain yesterday, first time in quite a few weeks. So
poor you.
I was going to say I'm not getting the violin out too just yet. But life's pretty good when we just finished training now. We've did a little bit of sort of walkthrough stuff and recovery stuff this morning for the boys who played, and then just finished doing some kicking. And always a little bit easier coming into training when the weather's like this. So hopefully it'll be similar in Dublin on Friday night.
Maybe not. Yeah, I mean, I know you've still got your place in the west of Wales, but we haven't had summer yet in the UK, don't think.
It was glorious in Brecon on the weekend.
Was it? Okay,
I should say it was absolutely delightful.
Well, you should stay in Wales more then. So Dan, you got your big final coming. How cool is it to start with, I guess, just being a big final?
Yeah, most people have asked this before, and it's brilliant to be in the final. When you're in you get to the finals of this competition, it's absolutely one that you want to go and win. And this club has had some heartache in this competition, losing four finals. So I think the importance or the perception this week is that it's not just, if we're in a final, if we win it, we win it. If we don't, we don't. It's very much a huge step for this group and the club itself. Because like I said, there's been four finals they've lost in this competition for a club and a team which has had the success, in that 4 or 5 year period. It's sort of it'll be a big, important step for us as a club to get it over the line. And yeah, and also just great to be part of a big weekend, really, I suppose. You know, we've worked hard for this over the course of the season, and hopefully we can go one further than we have in four previous finals.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So is that, I don't know, not rammed down your throat, but is that really important? I mean, obviously everyone knows about the kind of Johnny Galactico era,
yeah,
of those Heineken and Champions Cup finals, but you've got a pretty decent team now yourselves, haven't you? Is that pushed on you that this winning these things is really quite important from the ownership and all that?
This competition has been massively, massively pushed on us because Pierre was here, obviously, when they was back to coach when they were in the Galactico era. President, obviously, the new president who's come in has invested a lot of money and resources and in the club, the players, etc. And I think for us to get that in the trophy cabinet after a few near misses in finals will be a huge step for us and hopefully a bit of a springboard for us to really kick on for bigger honours in the next year, 2 years, 3 years, whatever it is. So there's definitely the significance of this week hasn't been lost on this group from the coaches. It's something that they're absolutely sort of desperate for in this part of the world, and obviously off the back of losing last weekend out in Racing with a number of changes, it's massively important that we get the job done on Saturday or Friday night.
Yeah. So talk to us about a few of the characters in the squad. Obviously some famous names, and Sergio Parise is still going on. He's one of them, isn't he? The king of the nightclubs still, down south, is he?
Well, I think he's more king of Paris. I think he's come down here and just living the tranquil lifestyle down the south of France by the sea and away from the hustle and bustle in Paris. But he's an unbelievable character at 39, still putting in some unbelievable performances. Looks after himself incredibly well in terms of working the gym, and how he's still going at 39 is unbelievable, really. After playing 15 years in the top 14, it's not as if it's a short season, Mickey Mouse League. You put your body through a fair bit in those seasons. So he's been brilliant. He's been also been really helpful for me because he speaks obviously perfect French, perfect English. So there's been anything which has been needed to say quickly or in the moment or translated for the team's need. It's been handy having someone like him who can speak brilliant English as well. Baptiste Saran has been brilliant here as well for me. So again, speaks really good English, so helps. And just a really good group of players. Really good group of players. The Fijian boys are good as well. Duke to Wainacolo, Wysea, Nice Label. So we've got a good group of foreigners here who have integrated with the French boys well. But yeah, Sergio's the king. My wife was starstruck when she met Sergio at the first, I think it was a Christmas party. Party, and she was a bit in awe, really. So, impressive character.
I was going to say about your French. How's the damn bigger spray in French?
It's had to be refined a little bit. It's had to be refined.
Industrial.
It's a little bit more. I think when the spray comes out, it tends to be more in English. So I think people can just about understand the basic words that are coming out. But I'm trying to speak French as much as I can. We just had a team meeting this morning and sort of made some points in the meeting and things in French. And it's just it gives you a real good feeling, real, you know, fair bit of confidence as well in yourself. It's, you're out of your comfort zone as well. And I hope and I think the boys have understood what the points were. So we'll find out on Friday night if we look as if we know what we're doing. It's been difficult. It has been difficult. I think anyone who comes over and says they pick the language up perfectly, easily, straight away is probably not being 100% truthful. It's not easy, but we've got a good group here, good coaches who speak a little bit of English and help along the way as well. And hopefully in time to come, I'll speak more and more French as well, which is something I've always wanted to do anyway.
Dan, how is the culture in French rugby? Obviously, everyone's heard so many stories down the years of, you know, bottle of wine at lunch at training and kicking the ball out intentionally at the start of the match just so there's a scrum and a fight at the start. How is it compared to those stories having played against French teams for so long?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say it's quite on that scale just now, but I'd say that there's definitely an element of, I don't think I've ever drunk as much red wine in my career as I have probably the last few times. In terms of when you go for lunch, in terms of it's almost like it's just normal that people have a glass of red with lunch or whatever and things. And I've got a French teacher who, I'm not sort of in a classroom as such with him. I'm very much sort of out and about in restaurants, shops, asking for directions, things like that. So every time we go for lunch and things, it's always like a glass of red on the table and things. So I've kind of enjoyed that side of it very much so in terms of the off-field stuff. And the culture is amazing. The fans, the people here are just absolutely crazy for it. The crowds are just absolutely crazy before games, after games. The amount of people, the cities, the stadiums are absolutely packed here. And from what I've sensed being here since November, there's a real feel-good factor in French rugby at the minute in terms of, obviously, the national team. National team are doing really, really well. A home World Cup in which they're going to be right up there as favourites to go and win. The top 14 as a domestic league is a very, very strong league. Now, people can say what they want about it, but what it is, it's thriving. It's packed out every single week. It's an attractive, colourful league for people to come and play in and test yourself in. And I'd say the culture is very much, your home games are so important. Your home games are so, I'll flip it, the away games are so difficult to win, whereas your home games probably are so, mean so much to the crowd, the supporters, the club, that it just focuses you a little bit more for your home games. But the away games are definitely, definitely tougher to win out here. And I think French rugby is in a really, really good place at the minute.
And given all the difficulties that, you know, we've all been witnessing in English and Welsh club rugby, are you just enjoying kind of being removed from it all and having a lovely time in the sunshine?
Yeah, I am actually. Whenever I speak to, you know, yourselves or people similar, people think, oh, you know, people see the blue sky in the background and by the sea and all those bits and pieces. And of course, that was part of the decision to come and play for this club, because that's when you play, I think when you play for Toulon, that's a big appeal and it's quite an easy sell. But you can also fall into a bit of a trap, which I think some players have over the years, of thinking that you're just here for the house with the pool and the weather and things like that. And I'd like to think my character isn't that. And it's very much when you come into work. Of course, when you're away from work, you enjoy the weather, the beach, etc. But I think it's important that my character still has that desire to work incredibly hard, achieve things on the field as well as enjoying it off it. And like you said, the finances and the struggles that's going on probably at the minute in England and Wales does make it, it just feels I've been a little bit lucky with timing to get out of there in the right time. And I'm certainly going to enjoy the next couple of years and make the most of it. Like I said, in the sun and with my family, living a really nice lifestyle.
Dan, you obviously went back during the Six Nations and it was, I don't know, another Six Nations with a bit of chaos going on. But did this one feel different to maybe the other ones where there was talk of regions merging and all that when you won the Grand Slam in 19? Was it... There's almost more despair this time. It was just like, not again, and how we are in this position.
I think that it seemed like there was more desperation around this time around, that boys were really, you know, I think almost in 2019, but I think boys were sort of thinking, no, this isn't going to happen, or this can't happen, or there's going to be something that's going to save it. Whereas I think that this time around, it felt very real. Again, it was difficult for me to really comment on because I wasn't living and breathing it and directly involved in it, but you can just see the stress and the strains on people. And I think that certainly that England week took its toll a little bit on the squad. And almost, I've said previously, we were almost quite glad to get out of the Vale and go to Paris and Rome and East for the week, get away from things. And, you know, we do it pretty well in Wales, sort of trying to put a crisis into Welsh rugby. We're pretty good at that. If there's a World Cup for that, we'd definitely be world champions. So we'll see. I hope things improve, because it's, like I said, you've got lots of friends and colleagues who play there, and I hope things can improve. But it was difficult going back. And I think when you compare the two, it's chalk and cheese really in terms of the finances, the support that you've got over here in terms of for the game. It's chalk and cheese, I think.
It must be tiring though. Like you've had this for a lot of your career, that the whole siege mentality thing works to a point, but when it's guys' livelihoods and properly affecting what they're going to be doing next season and their wives, girlfriends, partners, mums, dads are all really concerned, it's trying to win a game on a Saturday and then there's thinking about where your next paycheck's coming from, isn't it?
Draining, and it was draining for me being in all those meetings, and I didn't really have anything to lose in a sense. You know, it was very much, I was fairly secure in my position, but it was just draining in terms of listening to, going over things over and over and over, and what's right, what's wrong, what's the best thing to do, is it going to happen, is it not going to happen, all those. And whether everyone's happy with what's the outcome is and what's come and what their contracts have been offered and accepted and signed, whatever, I just hope that at least boys can park that now and at least sort of try and concentrate on being in a bit of a bubble together for the next couple of months in Switzerland and Turkey. And we tend to do a lot better when we're away from things and, you know, out of the goldfish bowl, and we can just focus on ourselves, focus on the rugby, the conditioning, and not worry about, you know, hopefully not worry about the contract situation and the ifs, buts and maybes. At least now boys know whether they're in a good position or bad position. They know what position they're in.
If you're talking to the Welsh rugby public now, is the message that, look, we're going to be all right. Like, took a couple of months together, those camps, you always perform pretty well at those World Cups, better than expected in the last couple particularly.
Like, yeah, I think that, you know, you can never see into a crystal ball, can you? What experience has told me and has taught me that during World Cup cycles, now I'm not pretending that we're in the same place that we were certainly 4 years ago in terms of a settled team, a winning team, success. You know, we're in a different space now. But what experience and what time has taught me is that the more we are together, the better we get. The more, you know, the World Cup campaigns in, you know, you look at 11, 15, 19, and hopefully this time, whatever we've done has seemed to work okay for us. You know what I mean? And I'm not saying we become the best team, but we've certainly been unlucky in a couple of those competitions with injuries and whatever. But so I think we've got confidence in that the more time we spend together, we can improve. Now, we're probably starting a little bit behind the eight ball this time around compared to previous years or previous tournaments. But I think what we have got is we've got confidence that we'll spend more time together, work on conditioning, rugby, et cetera, and hopefully just be a bit more cohesive and understand exactly what we're trying to do. A bit more time together just helps everything. So hopefully that'll help in terms of this summer, and we can spring a few surprises, because no one's going to be talking about us for competing or maybe getting out of the pool or whatever people are going to say. It's actually quite nice for us at the minute to just really keep our heads down, get out of the country, and see if we can spring a few surprises.
Yeah. So bringing it back to this week, you quite enjoy playing Scottish teams, don't you? You had a bit of fun in the Six Nations, didn't you? All talk, no silverware.
I got asked by a Scottish journalist last week. He said, "Is the experience in Murrayfield going to taint you playing against a Scottish team?" I said, "I've also had quite good experiences playing against Scottish
quite a few
my
of
career
them.
As well. I'll have you know. So I've done okay against Scottish teams previously as well, but for me, it's going to have absolutely zero relevance whatsoever. Yeah. I'm playing for a French club against a Scottish club in Dublin. So it's going to have zero. You know, Glasgow are a very good side. That's the first thing to say. They've had a tough couple of weeks, obviously losing the quarterfinal at home to Munster. But they're a very good side. They can play different ways. They can mix it up in terms of throwing the ball about with some exciting players, but also they've got a group of forwards who can strangle a game as well, strangle a game when is needed. So we're going to have to make sure we play really well. We've got, you know, an X factor backline and some real grunt up front. So I think for us, it's about making sure we finals and big matches are about making sure your basics are pretty good. So we focus a lot on this week, making sure our set piece, our discipline, and our kicking game is on the money. So if we get that right, generally I think everything else will fall into bar. But we've got two teams who will like to throw the ball about, but also can mix it up a little bit when we need to, set piece wise as well.
Yeah, well, I'm going to make a plea on behalf of all journalists that you don't stop telling us what you think, because it's all good fun. It's all meant in the right way, isn't it? It's all a bit of fun and adds to the spice, and we don't want people to be boring and don't say what they think.
I'd always like to think I answer honestly.
No, you do.
Some people will like it. It's going to come back and bite you on sometimes. But if that's what I think, I'm just going to say it. I couldn't care less about people having an opinion on me. I'm far past that now.
No, good on you. Good on you.
Yeah. So no, all good. All good. So hopefully we can do a job on Friday.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, all the best for it, Dan. And
cheers. Well,
really good luck for the rest of the season and everything else, because you got trying to get into the barrage too, and then popping back over to Wales for all that. But for now, thanks so much for joining us, Dan, and good luck for
Pleasure,
Friday.
Will. Absolute pleasure, as always. Cheers, mate.
The train is now approaching junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So, yes, as flagged, we have a Champions Cup final on the weekend in Dublin. Leinster against La Rochelle, a repeat of last year's final, the first time we've had an exact repeat, although different venue, year after year. And now, we were just talking before we hit record on this, and I think we're all massive fans of La Rochelle, basically because they've got a cool ground and they've got a fun place to go, right? But, Mark, do you reckon they've got a proper shout at beating Leinster in Dublin?
I do. I actually think they're going to do it. I think their game is one that's almost kind of custom made for a game like this. They're one of the few sides in Europe who could go in confidently, backing themselves to out physical, if that's the right word, Leinster, to out muscle Leinster. It's just such a sensational pack that they have there, allied to everything that they have behind the scrum as well. You saw the scenes last year when they went back to La Rochelle having won it. I think if you're a player that's been part of that, you're going to be absolutely driven to sample it again. And I just think they're going to have... I think it's going to be tight again, but I think La Rochelle will have just enough.
Yeah, absolutely. Elgin, you've been to La Rochelle quite recently, haven't you? Was that the Gloucester game?
Yeah, I was at the Gloucester game as a neutral fan during a part of a little road trip around the south and south and the west of France. And it of the 14 or 15 or so grounds I've been to in France, it is now my favourite one. Yeah. Just the atmosphere there. It was a sellout crowd. Obviously, it was a great game, and Gloucester came so close to winning as well. And just the whole atmosphere of just how beautiful the town is by itself, the singing and the chanting. I mean, when Weenie Artonia was down injured, the whole crowd was chanting his name as if trying to revive him, and it seemed to work. And we, the three of us that were there, didn't seem to recall a crowd reviving a man just by chanting his name before. But no, it was a spectacular occasion, and yeah, it's one of my favourite places in France to watch rugby.
So I watched them in that Exeter game in Bordeaux the other week. Obviously down the road from where their actual stadium is, but that was awesome. And they put a yellow flag on every seat, including in the press box, which we put quietly underneath the seat rather than waving it. But I just felt so that there was something about in the way that they smelled blood that reminded me of the France game against England in Twickenham, where if they sense a small weakness in your defence or a chink in the armour or something, or someone makes a dominant carry, you can almost see the rest of the team physically rise up, and the crowd love it too, and they smell it as well, and you can hear them. It's funny sometimes, isn't it? Because we're used to the sounds and sights of sort of British and Irish crowds, but it's a bit like Spanish football where there's a different noise they make when a goal goes in or something. And the French are different. There's a sort of wee kind of noise to it when they get going. It's quite fun, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's when French forwards pick and go up the middle, it is just the best thing in rugby. Because like you say, the crowd just all get behind it. Yeah. And it is one of the great sights of the game. And yeah, it is different to other nations. I don't know why. It's just completely intangible. But it is just different watching French forwards pick and go up the middle. Yeah.
And we haven't even mentioned him yet, but the cool narrative for the second season in a row is Man of Munster, Ronan O'Gara, trying to beat Leinster in Dublin. That's quite fun, isn't it, Mark?
Yes, I'm sure it'll mean very little to him. But, it's all about the players, of course. But no, that just adds another absolutely brilliant layer of narrative over the top, doesn't it? And he's done fantastically well at La Rochelle. He's kind of demonstrated himself already to be one of the, you know, not just one of the most promising, one of the, in the here and now, one of the best coaches in Europe. Mm. So, you know, another continental title to under his belt would cement that.
Yeah. So, are neither of you giving Leinster a shot? They're going to be favourites probably with lots of the bookmakers, aren't they, to win the fifth star?
I'll go. Yeah. I mean, it's going to be within 5 points either way. It's going to be a close game.
Could be an epic. Mark, what do you reckon?
I'm going to very much the same. I'm going to go within three, but La Rochelle edging it.
Okay. So we're going to go for a hat-trick. Maybe I should go the other way now, just to be more interesting. Leinster for the fifth. Because that would equal them with Toulouse, wouldn't it, for five stars on the jersey. And it's interesting, we've talked about it before, but we just before we're talking about the sort of domination of the URC or whatever it used to be called, Pro 14, Magners, Pro 12 before that by Leinster. But actually, they've not won the Champions Cup since 2018. So in terms of legacy and, I don't know, achieving the things that, that people are sort of assume they should do, kind of need to win this. And Lancaster would be pretty miffed if he left without that, I'd imagine.
I mean, it says everything for just how good Leinster are that people are regarding a second season without any silverware but with a Champions Cup final and a one-point semi-final URC defeat as almost a catastrophic failure because... Yeah, they've won four URCs in a row. They haven't won. Doing that double is so difficult. They did it in 2018, but now 2 years in a row, they've just fallen short. They might get, you know, half the double this year. But, you know, they have a league that they know they are able to rest players in throughout the season, which is, you know, a shame, but they know they can do it, and it does, by and large, work for them. So, yeah, like I say, it can sound sometimes like people are kind of willing them to lose and belittling them for what they do, but they have been so successful that just any drop down from that is what seems like failure. But again, you know, they're in a European final against La Rochelle, and it's going to be a great game.
It's probably no malice on behalf of them, but it's just what happens to the dominant team, isn't it? Like Man United in the noughties, Man City now, Real Madrid, like the top side with decent funding and all the best players, people want them to lose, don't they, Mark? That's kind of how it works. Celtic, same sort of thing.
Indeed, you're there to be shot down. And and people take as much pleasure in your descent as your own supporters do in your rise. So I think there's definitely a bit of that going on with Leinster these days.
Yeah, right. So massive final. We'll review it after it's happened next week on The Ruck. But to sign off this episode, I hope you're all ready for a God or Goddess of the Week nomination. Who wants to go for... I've got one up the sleeve, so shall I do mine? And then you guys can have a panic and a think while I'm talking. So I mentioned him before, and like, he wasn't the only one who was influential. There were loads of the Northern lads alongside him. But I just thought George Ford was epic on Sunday. And Owen Farrell was brilliant himself on Saturday, so that's going to be amazing. But the way he managed the team, and actually Rob Dupria, who played 10 for most of the season, probably one of the best players of the season, but they've shunted him out to 13. To accommodate Ford, and taking a few games to get going because of his Achilles injury, but he now looks like he's not just match fit, but he's got that kind of click in his brain as well. And he's only just pushing 30, which people forget because he's been playing since he was about 16, hasn't he? So I just thought he was epic. So he's going to be my God of the Week, George Ford. Well played. Elgin, do you want to go next?
Yeah, I'm going to go for Jack Crowley, who kicked the winning drop goal for Munster. And the reason I'm going for him is because, firstly, everyone loves a winning drop goal. And whenever big match tournaments, World Cups come around, everyone starts talking about drop goals. And especially these days, the death of the drop goal. And people still say, you know, when a team is in the 22, hammering away at the line and not necessarily going anywhere, commentators will still instantly go, I don't know why they're not going for a drop goal. Yeah. They happen so rarely these days that it is probably a massive gamble to go for a drop goal because it doesn't happen very often. But that just means that when you do see it happen, it's just a great moment. And when it happens with 2 minutes, 3 minutes to go, you win the game. We saw it with Freddie Burns last year. You saw it with Ronan O'Gara about 15 times during his Ireland and Munster career. And now with Jack Crowley. So, yeah, that's why I'm going with Jack Crowley for reviving the difficult dying art of the winning drop goal.
Good effort. Before you give us your God of the Week nomination, Mark, as a man who covers Italian rugby well and knows far more about it than most of us, there's a little bit of breaking news on the Italian front with their World Cup squad. Can you update us on what's happened up there?
Yes, so there was a sense that there would be some kind of big news line coming out of this today. There had been chat about Sergio Parisse finally getting his last appearance and whatnot, but that hasn't happened. Paolo Odogwu and Dino Lam have both been called in by Kieran Crowley to begin preparations for the World Cup. We know that they've been putting a heavy focus recently on trying to broaden their base by looking at dual qualified players, guys that have previously been thrown their lot in with other countries. And there's an immediate result of it. And probably in two areas of the team where they are really not necessarily lacking, but could do with some reinforcements. We know the threat that they have in that back three now, and an excellent standoff in Paolo Garbisi, but centres is maybe an area that can definitely be improved. Second row likewise. So it's not hard to understand the logic there. I'm sure the traditionalists will be up in arms as usual, but the, you know, the fact is that both these guys are fully qualified and ready to go.
Yeah, I'm not actually sure, I should look it up. I'm not actually sure on Dino Lam's qualification, but I know that Paolo Adoggu, he's not a residency guy at all. He's pretty much half Italian, so anyone complaining about that, that's completely legitimate. And having spoken to him before, I think quite a lot of his childhood was fairly Italian, plenty of pasta at Christmas, and he's half Nigerian, sort of Nigerian British, but also Italian. So good on him. Good on him. But yes, we should have your God of the Week before you dash off to talk to some Glasgow Warriors.
I'm going to go heavy parochial and nominate the man who's sitting through the wall from me at the moment. I hope he can hear me. In Franco Smith, the Glasgow coach who came in and inherited an utter shambles this time last year, both on and off the pitch. Glasgow just had almost 80 points put on them in a URC quarterfinal by Leinster, the aforementioned Leinster, when they were good. the recruitment had not been great. There was a real disconnect between the fan base and the club. And almost on his own, he has solved these problems. And whether he wins a trophy or not against Toulon on Friday night, he's had an exceptional season and been a real galvanising force across the board for the club. Been too long since a Scottish team genuinely were in contention for a trophy. He's done that on two fronts this year. So Franco Smith is my main man.
Well, hey, there we go. It's a decent spread. There we go. It's a big week now. We're winding down. A couple of rucks left for the end of the season before we all probably have a little bit of a break in June, and then piling back in the summer for the build-up to the World Cup, which has just come round quickly, hasn't it? But for now, that has been the ruck from the Times and the Sunday Times. Mark, you're flying off to Dublin for Friday. What else is floating your boat in the week? Plenty more to come from the Glasgow camp.
I'm sure there will be. We'll be filling our boots over the next few days.
Awesome. And Elgin, Giro d'Italia is on the telly. What else are you covering for us?
Well, I've been acting as the Belgium sports correspondent for the Times recently, because I've had plenty of cycling with Remco Evenepoel, who's just had to withdraw from Giro because of a positive COVID test. Who remembers positive COVID tests?
Yeah,
and before that, Luca Brasel in the snooker. So I've been knee deep in Belgium recently. So we'll see what happens. Geraint Thomas, my fellow Welshman, currently in pink at the Giro. So, you know, that'd be a lovely story to report, wouldn't it?
There you go. Well, plenty more sports to follow on the Times, but this has been the wrap from the Times and the Sunday Times, all about your rugby for the weekend. And we'll be back next week to review a couple of finals. But for now, thanks for listening. Follow and subscribe. Tell your mates. And see you all next week. Goodbye.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.